Bailey's like, these kids freaking suck. That's
actually
not real life.
I hate these kids. Stupid kids.
No. They say things that are too true.
Maybe we can just take this process slowly and see how it feels.
You are just terrible at this.
Oh man, I'm trying.
Welcome to Show Me the Movies with Justin and Nick, a movie podcast hosted by lifelong cousins slash buddies that digs into movies that mean something to us and our guests. I'm Nick.
I'm Justin.
And we have a guest. Who's our guest?
My name is Bailey Hunt.
Yes.
Guest of the pod.
Bailey Hunt, my brother-in-law, my friend.
Yeah. Whoa, we're all related. I'm not related to Bailey, actually,
true.
I guess.
We could change that.
We
can make that happen.
We'll find a loophole somewhere.
Yep. All right, great. So today we are talking about the movie Come On, Come On, which I'm really excited to talk about. Justin and I had not seen. We both watched yesterday for the first time. Bailey, I watched with you yesterday for the first time. Why did you want to do this movie?
It's one of those movies, and I think we all have them, where you watch it for the first time, and about halfway through, you're like, I think the director knows something about me that perhaps I didn't know about myself, because it said things that I needed to hear at that specific time. And every time I come back to it, I feel like it's just as profound, just as beautiful, just as awesome as the last time I watched it. So it also feels like anchored around the core question of the pod, which is like, why is this true? Because this feels like a movie that is like very, very true in a lot of ways. I also think it's beautiful and incredibly underseen. One of the most underseen movies of the past 5 years, IMO. But
I could agree with that. I don't know. I don't have any data to support that, but it just feels like that.
Yeah, for sure. Right. It's like, nobody's seen this. How do you know? It's like, because I know implicitly.
Partially because I've never heard anyone talk about it besides you.
Yeah.
Literally never mentioned.
That may be the most, what Bailey just said, the most articulate thing that's been said on this podcast so far. So great job. Cool, points thanks. To you. So just a little bit about the movie. Directed by Mike Mills. This was the first Mike Mills movie that I've ever seen. Bailey, you've seen several?
Yep.
Yeah. Starring Joaquin Phoenix, Woody Norman, who's the kid, who also is British. Did not know that until I heard him interviewed for something that was not this. Gabby Hoffman is Viv. Scoot McNairy, just one of just the greatest names in the world.
Elite name.
Yeah, just we're not really going to get into a plot synopsis because we're going to assume that if you're listening to this, you have watched the movie. But it starts off with radio interviewer Johnny getting saddled with caring for his kid nephew Jesse as Jesse's mom cares for Jesse's father. And Johnny interviews kids across the country about what they think the future holds. Anything that you guys want to add to that you think is really important here at the top?
Similarly, I was going to ask if anyone has a better synopsis. Sometimes this movie synopsis can kind of suck. I think this one is pretty good.
Well, I wrote that one.
Oh, you wrote that one.
Yeah, okay. Because I was like, this seems to be what we start with.
That one sucks then.
Yeah, then that one definitely blows.
Any sincerity is out the window.
That's good. So budget of this movie, $8.3 million. It made $4.5 million. It also, so with what Bailey was talking about, underseen, under-talked about, it also came out in 2021. Did you see it in theaters for the first time, Bailey?
Yeah. A good friend of ours and I went to go see it at an AMC, weirdly. It was like us and like four other people there.
Nice.
Two people walked out halfway through.
Which is so
lame. And also what was so offensive to them? They're like, seriously? I feel too seen by this movie. Yeah, or they thought it was Joker, and then they were sort of disappointed.
Yeah,
because it's not.
It does have Joaquin Phoenix in it. So.
Yeah, so who knows? Who knows what's going on there? Yeah, I saw it in theaters the first time.
I've never walked out of a theater, and I can't imagine why they walked out of this one.
I have walked out of. I think I've walked out of one, and that was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I was going to just see it on my own. I don't even hate that movie, but I don't love that movie. And I was in the final 20-30 minutes, and I was like, you know, I'm going to go do something else right now. That's like the only one I think I've ever walked out of. Bailey, have you ever walked out of a movie?
I don't think so. Not in a long time. Oh, that's actually not true. I lied just now. I'm a liar. I saw Talk to Me a year ago, and the first time I watched it, it made me so anxious that I left the theater. I then finished terrifying. The movie later. It is a scary movie. It's not as scary as I thought it was going to be, but at one point I was like, I have to leave right now. So
yeah.
Justin, have you seen Talk to Me?
Yeah. It's pretty messed up.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember it, but I think it's more in your head and like looking over your shoulder type of feeling than like someone's going to kill you. I don't know.
I think I'm just really afraid of Australian people. That's the main thing.
Well, yeah. It's directed by Australians, right?
Yeah, and the people in it are Australian.
As
well. Australian.
Oh, nice.
There's a scene where someone hits a kangaroo, like it's a deer.
No way.
I thought that was really bizarre. Yeah, straight up, like they hit a deer or a kangaroo.
Wow. So. The movie Talk to Me and what's the new one? Bring Her Back.
Bring Her Back.
I have not seen either. They both look like they are directed by the devil, which kind of creeps me out. And so not that I won't ever see them, but I'm like, this does look like it would be successful in giving me a feeling of horror and don't always want to feel that.
Fair.
So Justin, let's get into it. Currently, we're calling our series of questions. And what are we calling it, Justin? Our series of questions and superlatives.
We're calling it the blender.
Yeah, Justin gives us a nice sound every now and then. So,
if I feel like it.
We're jumping into the blender to break this thing down into some little tidbits and morsels. So to start, and we'll start with Bailey since he is our guest. What is this movie's relationship to your life? How old were you when you saw it? So you saw it in theaters 2021, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And what did life look like at that time?
I think I was 22 at the time. No, 21. No, it would have been 22 at the time. So I was in college.
You're lying a lot in this senior. Podcast.
Yeah, guys, don't hold me accountable. I'm Pinocchio and my nose is growing so many inches. Anyway, so I saw it when I was 22. It was my senior year of college. And so it was a time of transition. I was about to go into student teaching.
Mm.
And, you know, it's kind of a volatile period of your life where you're like, I am looking at the future. And a movie that asked the question, what do you think the future will look like, at that point was a super resonant question because I didn't know. I thought that I was going to go into education, but at that point I also couldn't drive a car. Well, that's actually not true. I could drive a car at that point. Okay, so I got my license in 2020, which if you're looking, I got my license when I was 21 years old, which is way too late to get your license.
Yeah. Hey,
so I had been freshly, I was like I just started driving. I just started kind of tasting the freedom of that. And so again, just like a movie about the future, kind of not knowing what it was going to look like. I had met at this point my now wife, Isabel, and we'd only been together for a year, so I would hope that we would stay together, but who knows? Yeah. Luckily, we are still together, and, you know, that's been a beautiful thing. Another part of it that kind of resonated with me is, like, its relationship to siblings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the youngest of four, and so I have three older brothers, and I think it captures something that's really nuanced and specific about your sibling relationships, where it's like you love this person, but you also hate this person and you want to be far from them and you want to be so close to them.
Yeah.
One question that Jesse asks Johnny is, why don't you guys act like brother and sister?
Yeah.
And it's like, what are we supposed to act like as brother and sister or brother and brother or that sort of thing? So I also just love the aesthetic and the score from Bryce and Aaron Dessner, guys that do the national stuff.
Whoa, that's so cool! I didn't know that.
They're crushing it with the score here. Yeah, so I think this the relationship of like feeling seen by it in terms of like being about family, it being about the future, and also just being very gentle as a movie, because I don't think you see a lot of movies that are gentle, like can just treat you well, you know.
Love the word gentle for that. Yeah. I had not thought of that word, but that's a great word to describe it. So with that, what emotion do you feel the most while watching this movie?
I think hopeful, because it talks about the world, what it could look like, and the next generation looking at the world with so much hope, which is not something that you would associate. Like I've been a teacher for, you know, 3 years at this point, and I would not associate the next generation's viewpoint on the future with hope. I would associate with it quite the opposite. And so to see these young people looking at the future with so much like equally promise and also uncertainty and fear, I always feel super encouraging. There's just also like a palpable sense of like melancholy and sadness because it's all predicated around loss. Like these two people have lost something, Viv and Johnny. They've lost their mother. Mm-hmm. You know, Viv just got out of her marriage to Paul, played by Scoot McNairy. And then, you know, obviously Johnny has left his relationship at some point in the most recent future. So there's also this feeling of like everybody is losing something and what's left in the gaps. And Jesse gets to kind of step into those gaps and speak into it for all the people. And yeah, he's kind of the great connector. So hope that made sense.
It did.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
I was very thrown back by when they were talking to the young kids and interviewing them, and a lot of their answers were hopeful, which... Mm-hmm.
Because the interviews are real, too.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that while watching it. I figured that out post-watching it, that the interviews are... Those kids are not actors.
So what are you saying with that then? Like, they're published somewhere then? Or...
I don't think they're published. I don't know. I don't know if they're published anywhere.
But like they weren't paid
the
actors.
The kids were not paid actors. These interviews, in as much as they can be real, it's like it's a mending of reality and fiction with having a character, you know, in the movie asking. But these are kids who are not actors who are giving these responses.
Well, that's so cool, because then like they're just putting together in the film like real answers. Like they're not forcing anyone to say anything. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think about that kid near the end of the movie, and he talks about how, like, boys shouldn't cry because his mom is like, boys shouldn't cry.
Yeah.
And he's like, why? You know, why are we not allowed to cry? I think that's such a beautiful question for, like, a 10 or 11-year-old to ask, and for that to have been authentic in some way, right? Like, I don't know what is performance and what isn't, but even still, I think that's such an important question for – yeah.
Yeah. I said that I had a feeling while watching it of relatability. And I also, this is not as much a feeling, but just a word that I associate with it, which is tactile. This movie, even though it's in black and white, which obviously is not how we perceive the world, but it has a feeling of realness. I think part of it is the mending of the real with the fictional with those interviews. But I also think part of it is the way the dialogue is written is just how people talk.
Yeah.
More so than almost any movie I can think of, it is just like, this is how people talk. In one of our testing episodes, Justin, you and I talked about The Way Back. That's another movie that I would say to a lesser degree is a movie that the people talk how they talk in real life. But in this movie, especially with the kid, that kid actor is amazing.
He's amazing.
And the way that he talks is like incredible. It is just... It is how kids talk. And it just gives it this sense of realness that I think is beautiful.
Yeah. Justin, maybe you can speak to this, but when we were watching the movie last night, we didn't talk about it before or after or during. We just watched it and then we left right after.
Oh, really?
Maybe you could speak to this, but I think that kid is what Nick was like as a child. I was like, I think this is what you were like as a kid, Nick. Just like the questions he was asking, like the whole orphan routine, I was like, I could see Nick get up to that. Like, is that accurate or not?
I think there's some truth to that. I don't think Nick ever did the thing of like, I want to live in this world with like my parents, like pretend I'm an orphan, like that whole bit.
Right.
That feels like something that Nick didn't do. But I will say the like approach and just like inquisitiveness of Nick was definitely apparent in that kid.
Yeah.
Since you brought it up, I wrote down because you said that and it got me thinking about it. And at first I was like, but then there are some parts of the movie that the two things that stood out to me that I'm like, this does remind me of either things I remember about me or things that adults have told me about me when I was a kid, which is he wanders and gets lost all the time.
Yeah.
And my mom has talked about that a bit.
There's also like, I say this with kindness. That kid was weird.
Yeah.
Kid's weird. And then also, like, because I think me and Nick are both weird. I don't know about you, Bailey. but he's weird. And also, what was the other thing? Gosh, it's like right on the tip of my tongue. And it was, he's kind of a pain in the ass. And Nick, sometimes I think when he was a kid, it was a little pain in the ass.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He challenges people in just the right way. No, I would agree. I mean, I think we surround ourselves with weird people because the normies are uninteresting. I mean, it even talks about it in the movie. Like, Johnny is like, why can't you just be normal? And Jesse goes, what is normal? Like, what are you talking about? Like, normalcy has, it does not exist, you
and
know?
And, like, immediately he's like, Joaquin Phoenix is like, that's a good point.
Yeah. Right, right.
The other part that made me think of my own life in relation to this is when he's talking to his sister on the phone and she's like, sometimes he just does not stop talking. Yeah. Like, he just talks and doesn't stop. And I distinctly remember, and this is not a complaint. This is actually, I think, probably good for everyone in the situation. Growing up when I was in like the single digits age, I remember times where my mom was like, I'm going to go into my room and close the door for like 5 minutes and I need you to not talk like to me. You like go play with your sister or find something to do on your own. And I was like, oh. And I think at the time I was a little hurt, but in retrospect and also like working with kids now, I'm like, yeah, I get it. And I also think that was probably good for me to understand how I could be perceived at times, even though I don't know if I was making all those connections at that time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, I also would like say that the high moments with the kid, I could see some similarities with Nick because there's a lot of good in that movie too, where the relationship with his uncle is really awesome. So
moving into, we've kind of already moved here, but just what resonates as true to you in this movie? Something that really popped out to me, Bailey, you talked about this a little bit, but the sibling dynamics of just how siblings operate and the things that are said or in some of it not said, but with the mom, with Viv at the beginning saying, you know, we lost a mom and you were beloved by her and I was never understood by her. And the other thing with the sibling dynamic, and we're all three in our 20s, and so we haven't been adults for that long, but the kind of like impulse to insert yourself in your siblings' lives and or vice versa, where it's like, oh, I, because he talks about, or the movie at least alludes to him telling his sister, like, you need to leave your husband, essentially, because, and you can see why he would be thinking that, because her husband is not in a good place, but he also, like, needs to respect her choices and boundaries as well. And that was just like, dang, that's like, when you have a sibling relationship, you just have so much history and intimate history. It's just, it's palpable.
Yeah. I will say that it portrays being a non-parent tasked with a child that is related to you, but also not your child very well. Because he literally called his sister on the phone and said, like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, welcome to my freaking world because I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And she's basically a single mother.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's many moments in that movie where I was like, yeah, I would do what Johnny's doing, or just like when he had like some meltdowns with the kid. So why am I forgetting his name?
Jesse.
Yep. Yeah. So I thought that was portrayed really well.
Yeah. I think it like in that same direction, like when he proposes to Jesse first, the idea of going to New York, and then he calls the mom and he's like, yeah, I already asked him. And she's like, you already asked him, you know? And that feels obvious probably to a parent to be like, no, you run it by me first, guy. Like, no, you don't just make the call. Like, it's very clear in both overt and like kind of subtle ways that this is not old hat to Johnny. It's like something that is very unnatural. I also felt like something that like resonated with me was just like the music as a whole and the way that the music interacted with the different sequences, in particular the sequences when Johnny was reading different books around the house, like when Claire de Lune played, and there's a few other.
I love me some Claire de Lune. Great. By the second time they played Claire de Lune, I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah, more
I'm really vibing.
Yeah. And just what those books told us about the characters without actually stating it. Like in one of them, it's like a children's book about, it's called The Bipolar Bear Family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through that we understand that Paul, Jesse's father, probably has bipolar disorder in some capacity. We don't know what that really means. Yeah. We're never given like explicit exposition as to what you know, again, that looks like day to day. But we understand through the novel or the short book that he's reading what's going on and what is true to their family dynamic. I also just feel like some of the language that some could say is like therapy language is really important, I think, for people that maybe aren't in therapy or aren't familiar with like the mental health field to hear, like mindfulness techniques and like touching your fingers when you feel dysregulated. Like, that's really cool for like a commercial audience maybe won't pursue this movie. You know, look at $4 million gross. Mm-hmm. But if they happen to stumble upon it and be like, so sometimes I feel like not okay. And sometimes hearing I'm not okay and that's a perfectly rational thing to feel is something anybody – like we all need that at times. Just so many pieces of it resonate.
And they did a good job with that with Jesse, because you could tell he was not okay, but he didn't want to admit that. And when you're an adult or – more in touch with your emotions, you can easier get to that place. But since he's, 10 or 11, he's not really, he doesn't have the practice in this. So he has to
but he knows a lot of the coping skills, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
He had learned it from somewhere. And that's I think that's huge, because you can learn coping skills. Like, I think a lot of times we just assume that as you become an adult, you just understand how to cope. And that's true in some ways, but not every coping technique is a good one, right?
Yeah, so there's trial and error as you grow and get older. But Johnny had to push him to be like, you're not fine, and just say it.
Yeah. Another thing that I love is that the movie does not deal in extremes. Bailey, you were talking about the rarity of this kind of movie and its gentleness. And I think that a lot of times a movie like this will feel the need to make things super extreme. Yeah. So the dad's mental health, you see pieces of it and the movie shows you enough to be like, I can see how this would be an issue, but it does not go into crazy melodramatic territory.
Right.
And I think in a lot of versions of this movie, Joaquin Phoenix's character is a major drug addict and this kid teaches him something about himself.
Right.
And this movie doesn't do that. And I really love that it doesn't do that, because it's still really entertaining with the black and white photography and with the realness of the conversations happening and how it just has a really nice flow. It doesn't need to go to extremities, which, I mean, a lot of the movies that I love do go to extremities, but this one is just it's almost one of a kind in that way. I can't think of another movie that does it to this degree.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's absolutely right. Because in a lesser hand, some of those sequences, again, with the dad or you're right, Joaquin Phoenix would be a drug addict, or he'd be saving the kid from some terrible situation. Mm-hmm. And in reality, and it is with most situations, they need to save each other. An element of Jesse needs to learn from Johnny. Johnny needs to learn from Jesse. Viv needs to learn from both of them and from her husband. Everybody's learning something from each other. There's no antagonist. There's no the plot synopsis you said is the truest it can be. If you map it from point A to point B, not a lot happens, but the things that they learn from each other, I think, is what really you take away in the end.
I agree 100% with your take, Nick, because on that, what you guys have both mentioned, and a lot of the problems or conflicts that arise are pretty normal stuff that you can expect when you're watching a child that is not your own and you don't have a great relationship thus far with your sister. So just losing him or blowing up because you got mad, I would definitely do that. I am someone who has a lot of anger inside them and sometimes can come out, and
it's very apparent. You always know Justin has a temper like a Roman candle. He could just snap. Put his head through the drywall.
I just get pushed to the brink, and then I'm like, all right, I'm done. I'm going to be super upset. And that's where he is in that moment, and I get it. So, at the end, isn't Jesse upset? He's not fine because he wants, he's going to go see his mom soon, but he doesn't want to almost because he's had a great time with his uncle.
It's sort of unclear what he's not fine about. I think it's just the cumulative effect of I don't really understand what's happening with my dad. Nobody's really telling me directly, but they're kind of telling me directly, and all of this stuff is shifting, and he's I think just really needs consistency as a kid, just based on like what we know about him. Like, it's exciting for him to go on these adventures, but like he's becoming super dysregulated all the time because he's like, I want my mom. Like, that's what I really want. I think through that he's saying, I want normalcy. I want consistency. I want all of these things. And like, though it's been a great adventure, you know. Yeah, I think he's not fine because of all those things.
What does he ask about his dad, too? When he's having one of those good conversations with Johnny, he asks, like, why does my dad need help? I think that's what
it is. Yeah, right. That's what he says. Yeah. Why does my dad need help? I think is the exact question.
Yeah.
And the questions are great, and they're almost impossible to answer.
Yeah.
Like, and to answer in a developmentally appropriate way and in a way that respects the privacy of, like, your dad and your mom, too, and, like, that kind of thing.
I think it like handles the idea of what is developmentally appropriate and what isn't really well.
Yeah.
Because I think Johnny tries to give Jesse so much freedom that he just isn't capable of handling.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, I didn't realize I couldn't do this.
He gives him all the sugar.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't realize I couldn't give him ice cream. I didn't realize that I could, you know, not like put him in front of a screen from how many hours a day.
That's a classic kid thing, being like, I can do all these things. Yeah. Like, all right, well, I guess
my mom
say
lets
so.
Me do this.
Yeah. 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 And then afterwards, he's like, why did you do that? And he's like, because you said you could take it. It's like, why would I know? I'm like 9 or 10 or whatever old he is. Like, he doesn't know how to be a human in the world. Like,
something that was really nice to see for me is Joaquin Phoenix not playing an unhinged incel.
Yeah.
So, like, I wrote down some movies just that I have seen with him, and I was like, oh, wow, yeah. So, Joker, You Were Never Really Here, Gladiator, The Master, Napoleon.
Yep.
In every one of those movies, he's not doing the exact same thing, but every one of those characters is kind of an unhinged incel who, like, is this guy is not healthy. This guy is violent or has the capacity for some really dark stuff.
Yeah.
And is kind of just like, he leans really hard into that and is unsettling. And it was really nice to see him play the most normal public radio guy ever. Yeah. And he does a great job too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a super, like, it's a performance that unfortunately, like, doesn't get the awards recognition it deserves.
Yeah.
But I would assume that Joaquin Phoenix in his everyday life is probably closer to the unhinged incel because it just comes so natural to him. Like, he does it all the time. And so this almost feels like more this is conjecture. I don't know Joaquin Phoenix personally. But, you know, it just feels like more of a reach to play just like the most gentle, nicest uncle you've ever met.
He has to really suppress his crazy urge.
His Oedipal desires. Like, you watch Bo is Afraid, he's like, no, that's just me. Like, I just really am afraid of the world.
What did you like playing about that character? I mean, what character? Like, that's literally just me.
I walk in his shoes every day. What do you mean?
You go, Justin.
Okay. I mentioned this earlier. I just was going to say relationships are trial and error, and it portrays that pretty well. I mean, a lot of the mistakes are made and you just learn as you go. So I thought that was something that was true about this movie.
There's a part in the movie where the mom, where Viv says, she's like, he's acting out to see if you will still love him, essentially. Yeah. Like, he's acting out because he wants to know that that you are going to be there and that he's going to be secure even when he's acting out. And that to me relates to the orphan situation too, where he is like, I'm an orphan, can you take me in? And this wanting to be chosen and to be, to belong even. And so that's something that everyone obviously has. And that was just so beautifully portrayed, I think, with the orphan game that he plays, but then also with the mom just saying it outright. She's like, he is doing this for this reason.
Right.
Yeah. And it can be really hard to love people when they're in that mode. But
right. Like, I think that's all anybody wants in that situation, just to be like, yeah, you belong here. I will still take care of you. You are not too much. I think the too muchness is also something that feels really true, because there were times when I was a kid where I was like, my feelings are out of control. Like, I feel too much for people. And just to be told as a kid that you're not too much, like, your feelings are valid, is so important, I think, for adults to be able to identify and affirm that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just another note about the movie's real feeling, but still having this like visual juice. Two people that I thought of when watching this movie are Terrence Malick and Jeff Nichols. And they're stylistically different in a lot of ways, but I think both of those directors both show beauty, but then also just their characters have this sense of really being lived into, and things feel really realistic and or quiet, which, I don't know, just made me think of it. Jeff Nichols is more of a genre person than both of those guys, I would say, but still, like, has a quietness and a gentleness.
The way that they all, like, shoot the clouds and the sun, like, peeking through them, I think is definitely, like, a visual motif that they all utilize in huge ways.
Yeah. All right. What is not true about this movie? What that means is not like, oh, something happens and it is a bad thing that happens to a character in a movie, but rather, what is the movie putting forth that you're like, oh, this doesn't vibe with me, or I don't like what I think is being said here?
Yeah.
And for me, for this movie, it was nothing.
Yeah.
There was nothing in this, and I'm like, oh, I don't like that.
I think, if anything, I'm, like, dubious of, like, the nature of, like, the child interaction, just because, like, working with students, like, I don't meet students that are quite like that. Doesn't mean they're not out there. Doesn't mean they don't exist.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if sometimes it's, like, a little bit too clean in terms of, like, how things are presented. For me, this is a 5-star movie. It's a perfect movie. I have no issues with it at all. But if I were to, like, reach into something, I'd be like, that is too pleasant to exist. This is too pleasant. This is too beautiful to exist. But I think that's also my nature as a natural skeptic and cynic.
Are you talking about the kid Jesse or the interviews?
Both, I think, in some capacity. Like, Jesse is just, like, the perfectly sweet, precocious, pain in the ass, annoying in very endearing ways, talking about his conspiracy theories online and the nature between trees and
the conspiracy
fungus.
Theories.
Yeah.
I loved that part because when he's talking about the dead body that gets reanimated by ants and there's like a rock involved, I was like, this is the nonsense that, like, this is actually something you would hear a kid say where if you haven't seen this and read this online, you have absolutely no clue what on earth they're talking about, and you're honestly kind of concerned that they have even watched it.
Right.
You're like, what? Or at least I am. I'm like, this is.
Well, I'm sure you guys can relate because you guys are around kids a lot, and you're like, how do you know about this? Why do you know about this?
Where did you find this?
Yeah. Like, what?
I guess if there's anything that would feel even like remotely untrue, it would be just how sweet and beautiful the things the kids say are. Like, they spit out, like, universal truths that I think we all need to hear. But I think in the end, like, kids are more perceptive than adults. And so if they're able to do that, then, I'm just yapping. I'm trying to find a nitpick where there really isn't one.
Bailey's like, these kids freaking suck.
that's actually, not I real hate life. These kids. Stupid kids.
No. They say things that are too true.
Yeah.
I actually, my thoughts were adjacent to that where I was a little, like, if I'm splitting hairs, again, I feel like this is splitting hairs, but, like, if I'm skeptical of something, it is the relationship that they get to by the end of the movie, like, between Jesse and Johnny, and because they're together for, like, what, a week or two?
Yeah, I think so.
And it's like, man, they make a lot of ground and progress in that short amount of time where it's like, I could see that trip going a different way. And he goes home to his mom and he's like, my uncle's kind of weird. Like, why? I understand why we don't see him that much. Or, you know, like it could take more time than that. And I'm not, it's not impossible.
To counter that, though, like, they are together, like, the whole time.
Right.
And this kid is looking for, like, a father figure of sorts, probably, we can assume.
Right.
And so I think that, like, really increases, like, the bond.
I think,
but I also think there's legitimacy in what you're saying,
too. I think if there's anything that's, like, untrue, is that there's somebody in this, like, podcast world that's just available all the time to watch and hang out with that kid. Fern is just like, I'm not doing anything. I'm just going to hang out with Jesse the whole time. It's like,
I did wonder
what does this guy do? Like, what is his job at the studio? Like,
that's true.
Is he an intern?
Yeah, he could be an intern. He's a very equipped intern. He knows how to handle, you know, this child who's rather difficult at times, but also so beautiful and sweet.
Yeah. I didn't walk away from this movie, like, questioning that. It was more so pondering this question and then, like, finding a hair to split.
Right.
So,
What about best hang, worst hang? For worst hang, for me, I have no one on this. Like, it's the
dad.
So,
probably the dad.
All right, that's fair. Yeah. He might not be in a place to be a good
hang
right
he's
now.
He's not shown this that much in the movie, so I think it's easy to forget about him.
Good. Yes, good catch.
But he's the only person. The rest of them, I think, would just be phenomenal hangs. Honestly, Viv might be the best hang. She seems so cool. Like,
interesting.
Johnny, obviously very cool. He seems like a sweet guy. But Viv, just based on like what he reads of her writing, how we see her interacting with other people, I just want to know more about her as a human and as a character. I think she'd be a good hang for
sure. Okay, clearly I missed some things in this movie. The things that he's reading is from her, from
not
Viv.
All of them. I think there's one article about motherhood that was either something she was reading and underlining or something that she was writing. Because okay. I think it's implied that she's a literature professor or an English professor of some kind. Yeah. And so I'd just love to hear her thoughts
writer.
On. Yeah, yeah, right. I'd love to hear her thoughts on some things and also, yeah.
I said Jesse.
Jeez.
Because Jesse.
Great hang.
He's a goofball, and I'd love to hear. I love hearing kids ask questions, and he asks a lot of questions. Even if I can't answer them, I like hearing kids ask questions, especially kids who are odd. Like, yeah. I just like hearing what they come up with.
You guys would get along swimmingly. I feel like you guys would have a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Do you think he likes Sonic as much as you do?
I don't know.
He doesn't really talk about Sonic that much. But.
He doesn't talk about Sonic at all, so I don't know if we'd hit it off or not without that shared piece.
You could show him, though. You could show him the world of
true.
Of Sonic.
Right. Show him the way.
You could, yeah, right. Show
yeah.
him.
I didn't think about Viv, but I think I'd have to pick her. I do. I think Jesse was at the top of my mind, but I like kids, but there's a reason I don't work with kids.
Right.
So as cool as he seems at times, the down times, I'm like, oh my gosh, I would not want to deal with that.
Yeah.
Unless it was my own kid. Or related family member, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't hate kids.
Justin hates kids. This Justin.
Justin's holding a sign that says, I actually hate kids.
Yeah, you can't see
Indie
it.
Indie star.
You can't tell everybody.
Headline, Justin Chapman, kid right. hater.
And there's apparently a security camera in this studio. So
yeah.
They're going to find
right
the truth.
There is.
I have a few movie-specific questions. If this movie were in color, would it be better, worse, or the same? I wrote this question before watching it, and after watching it, the answer felt very obvious to me, but I want to hear your thoughts.
So much worse. It's yeah. be so much worse. And I think, like, for it to feel as authentic as it does, they'd have to do, like, some sort of film grain or shoot on film, like, or something. I don't know if it was shot on film or shot on digital. I assume digital, because every movie that's shot on film is like, this movie was shot on film, you know?
Yeah, they really plastered it.
Yeah, right. Every poster for The Brutalist is like, did you know? CinemaScope, baby! Or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was my impression of Brady Corbet.
It was a very good one.
Thanks. I think it would be so much worse.
Yeah.
So much worse.
What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I think going into it, I would have said I preferred color. Coming out of it and sitting on it even longer, I do think it's worthy of being black and white. I think a movie has to prove to me that it deserves to be black and white, and this one did that for me.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when I see a modern movie that, while I was very excited to watch this movie, sometimes when I see a modern movie that's in black and white, I give like a little eye roll.
Sure.
But in watching it, I was like, oh no, this is amazing. It is awesome. And Mike Mills, so I found a quote of his about shooting the movie in black and white. So it's a little long, but I want to read it just because I think it is cool. So he said, black and white thrusts you into symbolic space. It's more expressionistic and more about art and stories and all of our reflections on ourselves. Also, you don't see black and white movies about kids very often, and I knew it would help the audience take this kid more seriously. It takes your focus off all the textures in the color world and lets you just look at human faces. And I think that's really perceptive.
Totally.
I will say, he talked about not having a lot of black and white movies with kids. Night of the Hunter, one of my all-timers, black and white movie. Yeah. With kids.
I mean, you use the word expressionistic. It's almost like the first movie you think of is like pure expressionism is Night of the Hunter. But
yeah.
Paper Moon, probably also an example.
Haven't seen that one.
Was Annie Hall black and white? I've seen this movie.
Annie Hall is black and white.
Yeah. Are there kids?
Yeah, there's no kids like in there. Probably
Wait,
very little.
Is Annie Hall in black and white? I know Manhattan
myself.
Is, but I don't know if
Annie I don't Hall think is. Annie Hall is in black and white, but I haven't seen it.
The poster is black and white. I think that's what's throwing me off. I think it is probably color.
I'd be curious to know like what his main like influences are, whether visually or like in terms of tone, because I do feel like this movie is singular, but I'm going to feel like a complete dummy. I'm looking like, oh, it was based on or inspired by this movie or this movie or this movie. But
yeah, it feels pretty singular to me. Yeah. Something that I thought was really cool in this movie. So it's black and white, but it's shot on digital. And you can see, because the cool thing with black and white is that it gives you so much contrast. And in this movie, you can still see, like, the way that things, and a lot of this is, I'm sure, lighting, but you can still see gradients and shadow and partial shadow and things like that. So it's really detailed and black and white, which is just a really cool look because a lot of, if you look at older black and white movies, it is in black and white to heighten the contrast, but it's very contrast. It's black or white. And there's not a lot of ability to see, like, shading gradients and things. But in this, you can see it all, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I think the only way for it to work, if it were in color, is if they shot it in a place that was not terribly colorful. So, like, like Manchester by the Sea, for example, is, like, not in black and white, but it's very blue as a movie. But it's because of the setting. You know, it just takes place in you know, the Northeast, and that's a very blue part of the country, both, you know, literally and in terms of voting. But anyway, but I think what we would take away from the movie if they shot in a, like, less colorful place, because the colors, like you're saying, Nick, like, even though it's shot in black and white, the colors still kind of come through. Like, New Orleans is a very colorful place. Like, it's got a lot of texture, and I think we'd lose that if we didn't have those places.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm not perceptive of these things, but I just wanted to ask if you guys agreed with this. It felt very – it was black and white, but then it also felt, like, dark. Like, it was –
what do you mean?
Like, almost hard to see.
Ure.
In a way. You know what I mean? Like, it can be black and white, but it felt like everything was lit dark. And it's harder to tell because it's black and white. I don't know for sure, but it just felt that way.
That's interesting. I felt like I could see a lot, so I kind of felt the opposite.
Okay.
I think the scenes where I could see that would be like when they go to the restaurant to get pizza. Like, it's very dark in there. And then when they go to the other restaurant, when Jesse's like, I have to poop. He doesn't have to poop, actually. He just doesn't want to go home. That whole scene is very dark. Like, you can't really see what's happening in the rest of the bar. But
also, when Jesse sat on the toilet seat, just pants and jacket and all just on the toilet seat, I was like, no.
Yeah, Nick full body cringe.
No, it's so disgusting.
Was the lid not under him? It was just like him.
It was just like the one that you sit on to poop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's just water there.
I have one other movie-specific question. So there's a part at the beginning of the movie, and maybe this is just to show, like, where they are relationally, but Jesse asks him to, like, tell him a story. He's like, I don't know any stories. And I'm like, you work in public radio and interview people. What do you mean you don't have any stories? So maybe he was just being a jerk. But I was like, what do you mean you don't have stories? You feel like a guy who would love story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think that's a good point, because it'd be the kind of person that loves to yap, that loves to hear themselves talk, that loves to tell stories, and he doesn't have one. I tend to think it's like, I don't have the kind of stories that maybe you want to hear. Which maybe there's like a lack of understanding with who Jesse is, because he seems like the kind of kid that's like, I'll listen to any story, man. It doesn't matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other any movie-specific questions from you guys?
No, not really. I don't know. This one was more hypothetical. Where is Jesse now, 5 years later? I'm really curious about where his life goes.
Great question.
Yeah. Is he in sports? You know, does he do?
No.
Yeah, definitely not. Is he on the esports team? Is he in band?
Perhaps.
Is he in choir? Yeah. Is he do theater? Is he a speech team kid? Like, what is he up to? Is he on the chess team? Does he do nothing?
Like, I really hope he doesn't do nothing.
Is he on news? Is he like on the newspaper? Like, inspired by his uncle? Like, is he pursuing journalism?
Yeah.
He's probably in a high school at this point, right?
For
like,
sure.
Current day?
Yeah. 14 or 15, something like that. Can we just pause?
Yeah.
Like, Woody Norman's career post this movie is, if you look at it, it is so tragic. He went from this movie to The Last Voyage of the Demeter.
Oh.
Not good, okay. For what I understand.
Yeah.
And then this year, The Electric State.
Wow.
Wait, what?
He's in The Electric State.
I don't even know what that is.
Nick doesn't know what that movie, because it's a bad movie.
You should know what it is. It's Joe and Anthony Russo, who I'll go on record and say they're bad filmmakers. If they're not doing Marvel stuff, because which I don't understand the translation of that. Like, literally any other material that they have, they completely shat the bed.
I looked at The Electric State. This looks like
Mr. Peanut
sharded out of a computer's butt.
Chris Pratt in that movie. Like, he looks worse than he does in the Monopoly Go ads, where he looks like an AI Chris Pratt. Like,
he has really bad hair and a really weird mustache.
Oh,
terrible mustache.
Woody.
Yeah. And that
makes me sad.
I just want him. I want so much more for Woody Norman.
Why is Stanley Tucci and Woody Harrelson also in this movie?
Black man.
Jenny Slate. Like, what the heck is this cast? Yeah, Brian Cox.
Yeah. Right.
Wait, Brian Cox is in the Electric State?
But Brian Cox is also in every McDonald's commercial. So I think he's...
Yeah. Some actors don't say no to anything.
I'm just saying, like, the two leading actors in this movie, I'd be like, yeah, that's probably not good. But then, like, you go deeper and you're like, wait, why are these people in this movie?
Right. What happened? Is Millie Bobby Brown in it?
Yes, it's her and Chris Pratt, the two leads. So it's like, okay, that's probably not a good movie.
Shout out Damsel one time.
Who?
Enola Holmes. Future of cinema, Millie Bobby Brown.
Getting into fun fact territory, Mike Mills.
Fun facts.
Yes. Mike Mills was married to Miranda July for over a decade. They are no longer together. But I thought that was interesting because I am not that familiar with Miranda July. I just last week watched Kajillionaire. And it is a movie, and it is it's a swing for sure. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, these are two very artistic people, and I just would love to see like a little snapshot of what that marriage looked like, because I bet it was interesting.
Yeah, well,
or maybe not.
I feel like it was, because so he doesn't have a lot of movies about marriage specifically, but her most recent novel, All Fours, it's about marriage, and if their marriage is anything like what's depicted in the novel, I would say it was probably very unpleasant. And it seems very similar, because they had a kid as well, a kid named Hopper, I think.
Okay.
And in the novel, they have a kid as well.
Named Plopper.
How'd you know? Named Dennis, after Dennis Hopper. But anyway, it just doesn't seem like they are terribly happy together, which is sad, because they are both like incredibly perceptive and interesting artists, which sometimes that just doesn't work.
Yeah, not a ton of fun facts, not a lot of trivia on this one that I could find, but I do want to go into what should you pair this movie with. It can be literally anything.
Oh, my God.
It can be another movie. It can be something that's non-consumable. It can be anything. And it can be more than one thing, because I thought of a few things for this, and I was like, no, I got to pick one. Then I was like, wait a minute. No, I don't. Do whatever I want. I'm going to pick more than one.
Can I go last?
Sure.
Is that cool? Because I'm going to think about it. I'm thinking in real time.
My pairing for this one is listening to This American Life, because even though Joaquin Phoenix's character did not remind me of Ira Glass really at all, but like just the whole public radio-ness of it all, and like asking kids about the future, that feels very This American Life to me. I've listened to almost all of their back catalog. It's like my probably favorite.
Nick would probably listen to This American Life and watch the movie at the same time. He needs double stimulation.
I would not.
On the other side, it's a Subway Surfer live stream.
No.
Family Guy all-time clips.
No, I would do that. And then I would also look at a photo album, like a photo album of my family growing up. We are in, I think people around our age are towards the end of the line for people who are likely to have had families who took pictures on like little film and developed them, and have like photo albums. And that's not going to completely go away, obviously, but so much of it is digital. And this movie just had me thinking about being a kid a lot. So I'd throw on some This American Life, and I would look through a little photo album of my family.
Those are really good answers. Thanks. I like those, especially the photo album one. I think it's really funny you say that, and it makes me want to take more physical photos. We went on a trip recently to Austin with friends, and Abby was trying to find a disposable camera to take photos of the trip.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a fun idea.
Could you find one?
She didn't. There was... Thanks. Well, we technically went to a Target, and there was one, but it was kind of expensive. I was like, we just want like a cheap one.
Yeah.
But it'd be kind of fun to just for like trips like that, or fun times with family or friends, take photos. My answer was I really only go to movies if it seems obvious, like if it's one of the first things that pops in my head, and I like this one because they are related. I think they're cousins, as After Sun.
Oh, okay. Totally.
Yeah. It's not... It's a little more, I don't know how best to describe this, and you can help me out if you want, but it's like more artsy. It's going
After Sun is?
Yeah, artsy.
I would agree, yes.
Yeah, After Sun is more that way, and it is trying harder in that way. I think.
Yes.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing. That's just how I perceive it. But yeah. It does fit well where it's like you're looking towards the past, and in After Sun, the daughter is looking. You're looking through this time of a trip with her dad.
For sure.
From the past. So I just think those are, I don't know, it wouldn't be like the most fun evening to double feature those movies, but it would
end
be
with
fun.
Come On, Come On.
Yeah. Yes. Totally.
That is definitely correct. Don't start with Come On, Come On and then watch After Sun.
You get some hope there at the end. I would say if I'm going to pair a movie, I'm going to say a few. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally.
20th Century Women, I think, out of his other movies, Mike Mills' other movies, I think that one is probably the closest in tone.
Okay.
Beginners, though good, is very quirky, capital Q quirky. And so I think
Zooey Deschanel quirky.
Yeah, right. Puts on those glasses from Claire's that have like a little mustache in the bottom of them.
Yes.
Not quite like that. But I mean, 20th Century Women, I think, is closer in tone because it's dealing with a lot of different characters at different points in their life. And, like, the relationships they have together. Mm-hmm. I think another movie that kind of reminds me of this one in tone is The End of the Tour, which was a movie that I almost chose for our conversation.
Yeah.
Just because it's about two characters that are going on this trip together, and they're learning more about each other, and they're learning more about the world around them. And one of them is a journalist, and one of them is an artist. And though an artist isn't necessarily childlike, they're able to tap into things that are more childlike, I think, because they perceive the world in a more abstract and sort of less direct way. Whereas, like, I would say Jesse and then Jesse Eisenberg's character have those, you know, more concrete ideas. I also think A Real Pain would be an interesting pairing with this.
Just love that.
Like, in terms of, like, family dynamics and exploring, like, how siblings totally. Operate together could be kind of an interesting vibe. In terms of other media, I think the album I Am Easy to Find by The National would be a good one. Also because Mike Mills has a film in related to that that's like with the music and that sort of thing, kind of tells the story of the album. But yeah. It has a very Mike Mills vibe. And then In the Shelter by Padraig O Tuama I think would be a good read alongside this movie. So basically, nice. You just got homework.
Dang, amazing.
25 hours of homework.
Yeah, Nick and I will report back next episode and see where we're at with that.
I also think, like, yeah, like Soul, like the Pixar movie Soul would pair really well with this, just in terms of like vibes and colors and, yeah.
I really like the National piece that you said, because even though I've not seen the Mike Mills film going along with that album, the National and this movie, those things are on the same page.
Right, definitely.
Very much. Those things strike a very similar emotional chord.
Yeah.
I don't listen to The National that much. Aren't a lot of their album covers like black or gray or...
Yeah, a few of them are, especially like their earlier stuff. This one, I'm Easy to Find, is like black and white, but it has like these like splotches of color like on it. And actually, the cover
it has a woman's head on it.
Yeah,
right?
it's Alicia Vikander. She's the woman on the cover.
Oh, okay, cool.
If like I own the record, and if you open the record, it has these like pinks and yellows and stuff like that. So it's like it's also their most like techno in terms of like. The texture of the music on it, and so that has that kind of like pops.
I like the A Real Pain answer because you could go either way, like flip like which one you watch first or not. And also that movie is also full of funny moments, but and then some moments where it gets not dark but I don't know, discouraging.
Yeah,
or?
More. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I also just like love the. I love you, I hate you, I want to be you. Like, that whole relationship when it comes to family, like, I think is so true. Like, it just feels very right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything else? That's all I got.
That's all you got for the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, well, let me go through a few things here.
Yeah.
Some of them are... I don't think the Hobby Lobby wall decor thing fits for this movie.
Okay.
But I just want to throw out these quotes because I'm like, I can't – sometimes movie quotes, I'm like, that just can't go untalked about. So you can – say these and you guys don't have to say anything.
I need to poop. I can't hold my poop.
Yeah, that, is that definitely. That could work as like an iconic or ironic Hobby Lobby wall decor.
Yeah.
My feelings are inside of me. You don't know what they are. When he said that, I was like, yeah.
Breach.
Yeah. And sometimes it does feel like adults are trying to tell you what is going on inside of you, and it's like, no, you don't know.
Yeah, right. Step off. adults.
Yeah, get out of here. Wash your hair, you dumb kids.
Yep.
That just made me laugh.
I like that one.
There was quite a few moments in this movie where I chuckled because of Jesse.
Yeah.
He's funny.
Oh, yeah.
Funny kid.
What I have one from Jesse that is, you have the brain capacity of an actual deceased dead person. It's an amazing thing.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that one's
for
so
a kid
good.
To say.
The redundant deceased dead person is so little kid coded.
That is that's a small detail, but I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
And when me and Nick would play video games together as like kids, I would used to say, like, I'm going to kill you till you're dead.
Right. Same vibes.
I'm going to kill you so much you're going to die.
Yeah, pretty much. When he's like talking about the future, I think Jesse is talking about the future and trying to like think about what the future looks like because he doesn't want to talk to Johnny about it. But then he gets the like recorder and microphone and he's almost like interviewing himself. He does the voice of Johnny.
Yeah.
And is like, what do you think the future is going to be like? he's like, stuff you would never think of happens. And yeah, you do never know what's going to happen in the future. That seems so simple and like, well, duh. But like you do think things are going a certain way in your life or in life in general. And then it's just like, nope. This thing you never thought of is going to happen.
Yeah.
It has one of my favorite like usages of the title in that same sequence. When he's you just got to come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Mm-hmm. He says it over and over and over again. And I think that is like a very little kid thing just to repeat that word over and over again. And you could see that he's doing it just to like make it sound silly. But it's true. Like there are things that you – like in a year from now that will have happened and you're like, I did not know A, B, or C will happen. And it's like all you can do is just push through and you say yes to it. And like there's an idea in the book that I mentioned of saying hello to things. And that's kind of a similar and complementary idea. It's like you come on through the difficult stuff, through the happy stuff and the sad stuff and the in-between stuff. But also you're like greeting it. And saying, I'm going to take this for what it is, and I'm going to keep moving through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really great sequence.
Mm-hmm. One more quote that I had was, okay, you know, when you're not in your zone of resiliency, it's okay not to be fine.
Yeah.
That is a great line that he says to Jesse, and I'm like, yeah, preach. That's so good. Mm-hmm. And he's even utilizing the language that Jesse has already used, and he's like meeting him on that level, which I love.
Yeah. In that same scene, he says, this is fucked up, and that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
And again, yeah, I just love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the quotes I had. And it's kind of hard to pick like scenes in this movie because I usually do like a favorite scene, but there's a lot of.
It really flows.
It does flow. You're not in a certain place for super long, usually.
Yeah. It's like you're in Detroit, then you're in LA, then you shoot to Oakland for a second, and you go to New York, and then you're in. You know, New Orleans, and it's the end of the movie. So it's like those acts, I guess, like the five-act structure. But this movie doesn't really have that, you know, in a way.
One of my favorite was the bathtub scene when he's bathing him.
Yeah.
That's the wash your hair, you dumb kids scene.
Yep, wash your hair, you dumb kids.
One of the scenes in the movie that got me pumped was the transition to New York City. And I don't know what the song was, but the song was banging.
So good. It's like...
Yeah, and some guitar.
Yeah, it's killer.
Yeah, killer. That was awesome.
There's one quote that was my first Letterboxd review of the movie, and I'm going to read it real quick.
Please do.
Just stand by.
I also liked Isabel's first review of it. It was like, this is the only kid actor I want to hear more from.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. This was the quote, no more thoughts tonight or worries, just stars in the sky. It's when he's telling like Jesse, like rest your legs, like rest your eyes, like rest your head, all of that stuff. And it's like, I love that. Like, you know, no more worries, just stars in the sky. I thought that was so beautiful.
Yeah, that is beautiful. And both of your sister-in-law, Amelia, she talked about, or she wrote, I'll remind you. Like,
they're talking about,
am I going to remember this?
When he is so distressed, he's like, you're not going to remember it? He's like, no, I'm going to remember it, but you're not going to remember it. You're going to remember very little. And he's like, what? And he's like so distressed about that.
So sad, yeah.
And that's the sweetest thing. And also just like thinking about the things that you hold dear and memories that you hold dear and experiences with people. And you're like, I never want to forget that. Mm-hmm. And having the idea of forgetting it just being a almost like benign thing because it happens and you don't notice it, but a terrible thing.
Yeah.
And like one of, yeah. Just something awful.
Memory is so fickle. Like, it's just like the things that you cling to and the things that you move away from and things that, like, in the moment feel so important, like, you can't even recall them. So it's not like Jesse's lying, but the idea of, like, being reminded. Yeah, I think that's such a beautiful idea.
I found that very gut-wrenching, that whole conversation, because I love, like, remembering things from my life. I'm very past oriented, so I love looking back on things. And sometimes when I can't think of certain things, or like the idea of that is like, oh no, I don't want that. I want to hold on to everything.
Yeah.
And there's like, there is a reality of some of the things that form you. Like, I'm sure this trip will be very formational for Jesse's life and just who he is. And a lot of things that form you, you won't remember them. And it's just like what it is. You're not going to remember everything that's going to make you who you are. And it's a little sad, but it's just how things work. I also thought that communication was a big theme, and intentionally communicating between the sister and the brother and Jesse and Johnny. Like, there's a lot of things that could go wrong if there's not good communication that happens in this movie. And I don't know. I can appreciate that.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. This feels like a... It almost feels like the end of a therapy session right now. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm so glad that I liked this movie, because going into it, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this movie.
Yeah.
It seems like it's going to be a movie that's going to be too artsy and trying to tell me something over the head. But like, it was so subtle and gentle and just wonderful. I loved it.
In a lesser director's hands, it would turn into something that is like super irritating, and it could be pretentious or like... Or overwrite itself, but I think just the way that they handled the subject matter, I thought it was it's so good. Every time I feel like it's like a gift that keeps on giving. There's something new that you pull from it. And like in different parts of your life. Like I've saw for the first time, you know, now 4 years ago, and I've seen it 3 or 4 times since then, and I feel like every time it's given me something new, something different, you know.
You can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I was like, I think the more, like, on a second or third watch, the returns on this movie would be very good.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
It's rewarding for sure.
Do you think that, I'm just thinking about this now, and I didn't think about this before the podcast or as I was watching it, but with the, like, you mentioned, Nick, the interviews are real.
Yeah.
Do you think the film, like, how they filmed this tried to, like, coincide with that, where it almost feels like you're just watching snippets of, like, a real, like real lives happening?
Yeah, like, documentary style almost.
Yeah, and they're, like, they almost starts, like, cutting, like, okay, not everything is going to work, but we'll cut the good things and put them in there. And, like, that's kind of how it feels, like, looking back on this movie. Yeah.
For sure.
I'd love to read, like how they approach production and like how they loop those interviews in. Were they done after the fact? Were they done before? You know, are they published somewhere? Like I would love to just hear how they did this as a whole.
That sounds really interesting. I also wonder what the kids' awareness were of Joaquin Phoenix and like, who he is. They're like, oh, I loved your work in Gladiator. Or
one of those kids is like, oh man, I love The Master.
Like, I love The Master. I so love You Were that. Never Really Here. That movie is so good.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I love when you kill all those people with a hammer and I couldn't see it.
Gosh. Would have been 5 stars if they showed the hammer. No.
Right, defeats the purpose of the movie. Would have been 5 stars if.
Oh, yes. Cool.
What if you Were Never Really Here, Come On double feature? What would that be like? I mean, also Relationship with a Child.
True.
You know, that could be kind of an interesting.
Don't know that well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found that movie super confusing.
I liked it quite a bit. And that's a movie that, like, after watching it, I was like, yeah, I really like this. But, like, it has so many parts where I'm like, this could go into a movie that I absolutely hate.
Right.
But it really doesn't do that. Yeah, it's cool. It reminded me the most of Taxi Driver out of any movie that I've seen in a good way. Whereas, like, Joker is, like, supposed to remind you of Taxi Driver, and I guess in some ways it does, but, like, this movie reminded me of Taxi Driver in the way that it's like, oh, these are the things I like about Taxi Driver, but it's very much a different take.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, that's all I have.
Nice. Bailey?
I'm good.
All right.
I gotta poop.
All right. Well, always remember to wash your hair, you dumb kids.